Jeff Taffet. I'm here in the studio with Lauren Landis. The late Patty Fink is going to be very, very late, and she'll be in next week. Our guest today is Rabbi Steve Fish. And, Steve, I want to thank you for kind of jumping in at the last moment. Yeah. Our guest who we thought was going to be this week is going to be next week. Yes, it was me who wrote things down wrong on the calendar, and like I did all summer. I had August double booked. I had nobody in July, but it worked.
It always works.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and you're in good company.
I either
double book or don't book.
Mm-hmm. So,
but we always love it when Rabbi Fish comes
well,
on.
Well, thank you.
Always.
So next week is our literary show. Today is our religious show. I asked Rabbi Fish to come on because it's just before the Jewish holidays. And, Rabbi, why are the holidays late this year?
David and I were discussing this, and we're both smiling behind the microphones. The holidays are not late. They're just on time. But as some of you may know, Judaism follows a lunar calendar. The calendar that the rest of the world uses follows a solar calendar. Now, since the lunar calendar is 28-something days, and the solar calendar, of course, has 30, 31, 28 days, solar calendar makes up with a leap year with one day. We Jews, because we're farther behind, have leap years seven times every 19 years. This happens to be a leap year, so therefore the holidays are right on time, but the secular calendar is late.
So why was September early this year?
Because it's still hot in Texas, David. I don't know.
Okay, that's what it was.
Okay.
Okay, so the holidays are coming up. What are the holidays, and why are you here now and not for Hanukkah?
Okay. Well, because for Hanukkah, you always play I'm having Hanukkah in Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
And you can invite me back for Hanukkah if you want to. I'll be glad to be here. We'll light candles together, although nobody can see them. We'll break fire codes. We'll do whatever you want to.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I happen to be here today, one of the reasons, is the fact that the main Jewish holidays are here. We start with the Jewish New Year. Jewish New Year is very different than the secular New Year. The secular New Year is celebrating the year that's coming, and we have firecrackers and champagne. We kiss the people we love, although we Jews kiss the people we love without any excuse. We don't need that. But the Jewish holiday of Rosh Hashanah, which means literally the head of the year, is a time for contemplation. What have I done during the past year? What have I done right? What have I done wrong? 10 days later...
Lauren, you listening? Because I'm making the list for next week.
I am very much listening.
I'm making the list for you and for Patty.
Okay, well, please make a list for me, too, because... Let's see, the last time I really had a sin, it was July of 63, I think.
Hmm.
And anybody who believes that, there is a wonderful, beautiful bridge downtown that I'd love to sell them. But, and also, back to seriousness, which is very difficult with this crowd.
Of course.
Yom Kippur comes 10 days following, and on Rosh Hashanah and the 10 days in between, we think about the ways that we have done things wrong during the past year. On Yom Kippur, on that very special day, we make amends, we atone. And a special aspect of Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, is that, yes, we ask God for forgiveness for what we've done wrong, for our sins. I'll explain sin in just a minute in Judaism. But what we've done wrong, but before we can do that, we have to make amends. We have to apologize to anyone whom we've offended. God cannot just make amends for us.
Okay, Patty, I'm sorry, Patty, I'm sorry, Patty, I'm sorry, Patty.
Good, David. And let me just mention the concept of sin in Judaism, mm-hmm. which is somewhat different than other religions. The word sin comes from an archery term, which means simply to miss the mark. We have free will. We're going to miss the mark sometimes. And teshuvah, repentance, is always possible in Judaism. Every day.
Okay, so then after that, there's one more holiday.
Yeah, there's one more holiday known as Sukkot. Sukkot is the biblical holiday of booths. It's when the Israelites dwelt in the desert and built little booths, frail booths. And we celebrate that for 8 days. The final day of that is known as Simchat Torah, or rejoicing with the Torah, in which we celebrate the beginning and the end. We Jews go through the Torah each year. We begin at Genesis, end with Deuteronomy. And on Simchat Torah, we read the last portion of Deuteronomy. which tells us of Moses' death just before the people entered the promised land. And we immediately then go to the first book of Genesis, Bereshit Bara Elohim, and the beginning when God began to create the world.
Okay, so, and really what Sukkot is, it's an agricultural holiday, right?
Absolutely. So, yeah, it's an agricultural holiday. Even though it's mentioned in the Torah that the people dwelt in booths, today it's celebrated as an agricultural holiday, a holiday, and even in rabbinic times, after biblical days, it's a time of a harvest, of the fall harvest.
If you live in an apartment,
You can still, there are still provisions. And in fact, in Israel, if you look at pictures of the way Sukkot is celebrated, there are the booths everywhere, even in apartment buildings. They put them in the parks, they put them next to each other. And if you live in an apartment, you go downstairs, mm-hmm. you make your little Sukkot. There are all kind of halachic legal ramifications as to legal reasons as to what you can do and don't do. But if you live in an apartment, please call Beth El Bina or look at BethElBina.org. I'm going to make a plug. Our phone number is 214-500-8304, BethElBina.org. We have a celebration every Sukkot, and anyone who wishes to come, as long as you let us know we're coming, so we have enough food, is welcome.
Good. I know in... maybe Christians would, some may argue with me, but the biggest holiday or the biggest celebration is easily Christmas. Mm-hmm. Is there one holiday that's more important than another in the Jewish faith, or are they all equally important?
Well, I would say that on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, it's the largest celebration in synagogue. The most widely observed holiday in Judaism is the holiday of Pesach, or Passover, because it is such a family festival, and families come together or communities come together. A lot of people, that's really the most popular and the most observed holiday.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Passover.
Okay, so I'm good at segues, right? At bad segues?
You're the king of...
I'm the king of bad segues, so we're going to segue a little bit.
You're the king of bad speech.
Thank you.
You can tell David and I have known each other for more than this broadcast.
So the high holidays, we have guests on sometimes that we just met, and we'll do this to each other. So the high holidays really are a time to reevaluate your past year, then evaluate your values for the coming year, decide what you've done that you could do better, what you shouldn't have done, what you should be doing, that kind of thing, right?
Right.
Okay, so let's talk about some values.
Okay.
How is that for a segue?
That was a great segue, but
thank
I need
you
to complete it as usual, David. I mean, you start it and I finish it, or I start it and you finish it. You've got to understand that David and I, David belongs to the congregation to which I was very graciously invited as the rabbi 6 years ago. So David and I have fun with each other. We kid each other. I finish his sentences. He finishes mine. The only one who can do better at that is Brian, his mm-hmm. husband. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the segue is the fact that of values, this is a time of looking at values. And especially this year in November, we know we're going to have a national election.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, before anything else, I want to say three things. Number one, even though I am a rabbi, I am representing an opinion of Judaism. There are as many opinions in Judaism as there are Jews living. So I'm representing only one opinion. I want to state that at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody writes a note in during the week and says, well, I believe this, or I heard Jews do this, understand, this is Steve Fish speaking for himself as a rabbi.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, the one thing I want to urge everyone in terms of this election is vote. In the last large election we had in 2014, 66, two-thirds of the Texas population did not vote. I urge everyone, regardless of your political opinion, regardless if you're whatever candidate, go vote.
Absolutely.
It doesn't take much time. It's fairly easy. And there are get-out-the-vote campaigns.
And you know something? There are lines on presidential election years.
Yes, there are.
So what?
So what? I mean, it's one time, as I say to people, if something is not going to bother me a year from now, I'm not going to let it bother me today.
Yeah.
And this is so very important. If you look around the globe, so many dictatorships, so many places where people do not have a chance to express their opinions. Mm-hmm. And I've also heard, well, my vote doesn't matter. Every vote matters. Judaism has strong opinions on that, that every person matters.
Okay. Do you see voting is, I always look at it as it's my duty to vote. Is it more of a moral duty or a civic duty?
I think it's a privilege, and both a moral privilege and a civic privilege. And, you know, since I am a rabbi, I say it's a moral duty. Our politicians might define it mm-hmm. in different ways, but it doesn't matter to me. It's important to do it. So anyway, you asked me about values, so I'm going to just go down some values.
What was the third one?
Oh, the third one was, no matter what I say today, I am not making an endorsement for any candidate
and
for
any
office.
And that's something we don't do on Cano, and we don't endorse.
Yeah.
That might be obvious from some of the things we say all the time, what side of an issue we're on, but we don't endorse candidates at all.
No.
Okay, and I won't either.
So. Yeah.
And in fact, I'm going to try my very best not to even mention a name of a candidate. I think you'll probably know from my statements which candidate I'm referring to. But anyway, let me get started.
But voting as a value, as a religious value.
Now, voting as a religious value is the fact in the book of Genesis, one of the first sentences, it says, every human being is created in the image of God. Now, whether you believe in an anthropomorphic God, that is God who has human characteristics, or as I do, as God is the infinite source of goodness and of everything which is positive in the universe that we can never even imagine, every person is created in the image of God. The other aspect of it, when you discuss a value of Judaism, is that not only is every individual important, but every individual has an aspect of arrogance and humility at the same time. So it is our duty to express that in our voting.
And wouldn't you also say that in Judaism, we don't believe that God controls everything in that, well, it doesn't matter if I vote because God will decide who the next president is. We don't believe that at all, do we?
No, we don't. Especially as liberal Jews, we do not believe in any aspect except the free will of us. God gave us intelligence. God gave us free will. God enabled us to make decisions. Very fortunately, our forefathers, so whenever they did it, it's more than 200 years ago, because I remember the bicentennial. But our forefathers, on the basis of Judeo-Christian values, created this nation.
So it would be,
and every person is created equal, stated in the Constitution.
It would be a Jewish value. We believe God bless America and what a beautiful land it is. But we don't believe that, okay, God gave it to us, God's going to take care of it, and we don't have to do anything. We believe that God gave us these
gifts,
and the right to vote is more than a right to vote. It's a responsibility to take care of your country. And I don't mean just for president. I mean for city council and for state offices.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, so voting is a value. Doesn't matter who you vote for. You vote for the person who... Well, how would you decide?
What I would describe, and I've thought about this a lot, basically politics is the interpretation of one values in the system which we have in the United States. One takes one's values and then decides which candidate comes closer to it. We've always been told, don't discuss religion or politics. And the reason for that is because both are value-laden situations. there are no values that are right or wrong, except, of course, I mean, on the far side of morality, of course, there are values that are wrong. Hitler personified those. And so did a lot of other people, and so are a lot of other people still. But at the same time, in this country, we have the right to have our values. We have religious freedom, and we have the right to express our values. And in many cases, these correspond. They may or may not.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so voting is a value, and you vote based on some of your other principles. We need to take a break in just a minute. What are some of the principles we're going to be talking about?
Okay, then? Some of the principles we're going to be talking about. First of all, I say Judaism is concerned for the welfare of the government in which we Jews live. We're going to be talking about business dealings. We're going to be talking about equality of all people. We're going to be talking about humility. We're going to be talking about ethics of speech, and we're going to be talking about environmental ethics, and somewhere in there, I know that I am going to fit in the aspect of a free press.
Mm-hmm.
So, how's that for summary?
That's a wonderful summary.
Wonderful.
We're talking
summary.
To Rabbi Steve Fish. He is the rabbi of Congregation Beth El Bana, the third largest Reform synagogue in Dallas. In the city of Dallas, third largest. There are
yes,
only three.
That's correct.
One is the largest in the country. One is almost that big. And then your congregation, which is, 100 crazy people.
Yeah, but in Collin, you have to, including Collin County, we're the fourth.
Including Collin County, we would be the fourth, yes.
And my rabbinic colleagues, call me afterwards if I'm wrong.
And when I say we, I'm a member of Rabbi Fish's congregation. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here with Lauren Landis. The late Patty Fink is very, very late this weekend. She'll be back. She and Aaron, where did they go? I don't listen when she
Arkansas.
Says. Oh, okay. I shouldn't have put that on our tape because Patty always listens to the tape. But Patty, you told me, and in one ear, out the other.
I listen, Patty.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly, and we'll be back right after this.
This is Rollins Gilliland, and I really, truly believe 89.3 and Lambda Weekly are not only adding to my life, but they're changing lives. So why don't you, at this point, when they need your help financially, call. They're going to give you the numbers. Call in and donate so that we can perpetuate the future that is now.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. Don't call right now, but if you did make a pledge, we'd love you to pay it. If you haven't, you can go online to KNON.org and click on the pledge button and make a pledge, and you can all of the pledge items that you can have for different pledge amounts are listed there. Add that you heard about it on Lambda Weekly, or you're pledging for Lambda Weekly, or whatever show you're pledging for, and we certainly do appreciate that. I played the wrong one, but
that's okay.
We have a Rollins bumper that we play.
We will never not take your money.
we would love you to make a pledge online. We are talking to Rabbi Steve Fish of Congregation Beth El Bina. The Jewish holidays are coming up. The main Jewish holidays, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. It's a religious month. Generally, people take off 2 or 3 days, though, not the whole month. I try to, but I don't get away with that.
And just before the break, we were going down a list of values.
Mm-hmm.
And let's start with the first one, business dealings.
Okay, Judaism says, first of all, the main thrust of Judaism is what Hillel said. Somebody came to him and said, tell me all of Judaism while standing on one foot. And Hillel said, what is hateful to you, do not do unto your neighbor. Jesus adapted that into the golden rule. And in business dealings, simply it's ethics and morals involved more than what the law says. Even in Jewish times, but the law was very specific about this. It said a few things. First of all, it said the kashrut, the fitness of one's finances, is more important than the kashrut of food.
It's on us.
Orthodox Jews, extremely important.
All right. And what's next?
I just want to go into business dealings a little bit. So, you are responsible for what you've done in business.
Correct. Judaism does not accept morally that you made a bad business decision. Oh, I'm going to declare bankruptcy. As but one candidate has done multiple times when he has made bad business, when this candidate has made bad business deals.
Okay, but there are legitimate bankruptcies also where you don't want a person to be indebted for the rest of their life and unable to make a living and unable to live comfortably. I mean, there are legitimate business failures.
Of course there are legitimate business failures, and there are business failures.
And let me give you an example.
Okay.
When this one person bankrupt or refused to pay, that caused bankruptcies in painting companies and among carpenters and, you know, and other people. So there was a cascading effect.
Or, you know, when certain people went to a certain school that's now been deemed it was not a legitimate school, they still had to pay for that. And now this is on their credit, and so they might need to file bankruptcy for that.
Understood, of course. And there are bankruptcies which, while legitimate in the law, Judaism doesn't allow them, David. I mean, I'm just going to be very blunt.
Okay.
Judaism says you've made a mistake. There are consequences for your mistake. And filing bankruptcies, I understand fully it is a business practice in the United States, but were someone also to brag about not paying his workers, for someone to say, oh, I'm very proud of what I did because I declared bankruptcy and left other people in the line, that to me is an illegitimate, that's a bastard bankruptcy.
So really, wouldn't the value be putting off paying your debts when you can pay those debts?
Of course.
Would be much worse than restructuring your debts, which is a form of bankruptcy in this
country. Sure, and I understand that. A lot of companies have come back from restructuring. But even in the Bible, it says, don't withhold the wages of a person until the end of the day, because they're dependent on that. And we know that in many cases, one candidate has withheld wages, claiming that the person didn't do a job, but really knowing that the person did not have the financial ability to sue the person who didn't pay them.
Right, right.
And that's been a pattern with one candidate.
Okay. Equality.
Okay.
Equality of all people.
Judaism says, as I said before, all of us are created equal in the image of God. Judaism denounces any person who feels that any other person is lower than they are. And Judaism really feels strongly that we should not be against people because of religion, color of skin, sex, sexuality, gender identity, economic disparity, or nationality. And all people are equal. Women, liberal Judaism took a position, so no sexism in Judaism. All people, I will put this very bluntly, I don't care where you live. If you're not threatening me directly with a gun or a knife, even then you're equal to me. You're just doing something wrong for me. But all people are equal. It's stated in the Bible. It's stated in the Mishnah, in the Talmud, in every aspect of Jewish.
I want to ask, what just your opinion? That theme is everywhere, whether you're Jewish or Christian or whatever. Everyone is equal. But why is that so hard to exercise, especially from, it seems like, one candidate's supporters?
Right. Because I think that some people have the view that has been passed down for generations of complete prejudice and bias. And I think also people, unfortunately, because of events, are feeling left out. And
you know, and we're I want to take this off of the presidential level. Because I think it's much worse right now going on at a state level. And since there's no election going on, we can name names. Dan Patrick, our lieutenant governor, who has made it his mission in life to squander the next legislative session with anti-transgender legislation.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the sad fact is that in the national election and with Dan Patrick and with other politicians who play the same game, whether it's related to gay rights, racism, or whatever, they try to simplify very complex issues. And the issue of bathrooms, it's not complex. It's a non-issue, Dan Patrick. But in other situations, such as saying, I have a great economic plan, or I have a great plan for defeating ISIS, without giving details, these are very complex. And these are difficult issues, and these are issues that you need more than a soundbite or a one-sentence explanation to do. And I believe one candidate has responsibly looked at these issues. The other simply gets away with those, and in many cases gets away with lying. An example was last week when one candidate said, I did not ever support the Iraq War, and there is verbal evidence that he said in his own way, well, you know, I support it. I don't care about it. That's the problem.
And you know, having a lot of relatives in New York, having grown up in New York but didn't live there during September 11th, and by the way, today is the anniversary. While I was against going into that war completely, I forgave all of the legislators from New York, New Jersey, Connecticut for voting for it because of their frame of mind. Did either of you get up to New York soon after September 11th?
No. It was like I went 2005,
mm-hmm.
So about four or five years after.
Did you notice a difference then from it then compared to before September 11th?
Yes.
People were just different.
Yeah.
They were nice.
Well, New Yorkers, I want to come to the defense of New Yorkers.
I'm a New Yorker originally.
Right, but of course there was a difference, and I want to mention that too, that our prayers go out to the families, to the survivors of all 9/11 victims, as well as all victims of unnecessary violence and hatred.
But, you know, I just didn't blame either any of the legislators for voting for that war.
They were given false information.
I was just about to say the same
thing. Aside from that, they were all given false information, but living there, you had to have felt like we have to get our revenge. We have to hit back.
We have to hit back at somebody.
The rest of the country could have held them back and said, okay, this is a smarter way to do it, I understand. But both presidential candidates are from New York, so it's not a matter of one candidate better than the other. It's one that's trying to deny now that there was ever any even inkling that he might have supported the war. And if he did, that's okay. Understand? But
then he turned and took 9/11 to his political advantage with another lie, of saying that he saw Muslims cheering the towers coming down, which is a blatant lie. There is no support for that in anything. And again, trying to go against a group of people simply because of their religion. As this candidate has done, we're talking about equality. This candidate has gone against ethnic rights. He has said he's going to build a wall. He has threatened a federal judge and said the federal judge could not reach an opinion because he was Mexican. He has said he's going to have an immigration policy to keep all Muslims out of the country. He's now tried to temper it, but he tempers it and then goes back and forth. Mm-hmm. What can we believe about a person whose opinions change from one day to the other? All politicians change. Of course, they're going to play to their constituency. But so many egregious examples of not having principles and then trying to play to whatever comes to the crowd, one day reading a teleprompter and then the next day stating what is really his opinion.
Mm-hmm. So many egregious examples of all people are not equal.
Well, examples of all people are not equal. Let's start with racism, okay, which is an issue very much present here in Dallas and just as much present in Philadelphia or New York.
Well, just nationally it is. With the shootings that have been going on the past, well, forever, but they've really been highlighted in the past 2 or 3 years, which brings me to another point. you know, this, today's the kickoff of the first NFL season, first game of NFL. And this morning we were watching, having our breakfast and watching the preparations of the game. And, of course, the issue came up of Colin Kaepernick. Now, if you don't know, he is the San Francisco 49ers quarterback. Actually, I think he's going to be the backup quarterback this year. But he chose not to stand for the national anthem about 3 weeks ago, and it has caused all kinds of ruckus throughout the country. Everybody seems to have an opinion about it. But I was wondering your take on it. You know, when I was thinking, Dave and I were talking before the show, and I was thinking about Jewish values, the first thing that came to my mind is, for those who don't know, the Jewish community played a pivotal part of the civil rights movement, you know, marched with Martin Luther King and so forth.
That goes back to that last value we were talking about, is equality for all people.
Equality for all people, exactly.
Right. The first president of the NAACP was a white Jew.
Exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
Now let me go on to Colin Kaepernick for a minute, because, again,
what do you think?
Yeah. What do I think? I think there's a difference between patriotism and nationalism. Patriotism says, I support our country. Nationalism says, I support our country no matter what injustices are present. I think Colin Kaepernick is expressing patriotism because protest is a constitutional right.
It is.
Nationalism, I think those that oppose him are nationalists. And that's frightening. Look at what happened in Germany. Look at what's happening in other countries. When people take their own arrogance and extend it to a whole nation and say, our country, right or wrong, and I disagree with those people who are opposing and are so upset about Colin Kaepernick, the only thing I can say is he's under contract. And my guess is that the NFL owners next year will probably try to put it in the contracts that all players have to stand in the national anthems. And we were discussing this before, LeBron. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what the Players Association, which is, what did you say, 68% African American?
Yeah, there's NFL, the players make up, or African Americans make up 68% of the players in the NFL. So, and we've already seen there's been two other players on two other teams that have chosen to kneel, and so it's spreading. We'll see how this wraps up.
Okay. Next Jewish value I want to talk about real quickly is speech. Judaism says that if you say something evil about a person, even if it's true, that is the equivalent of murdering that person. Words can never be taken back, and one can't.
Okay, so compare that to what we were just saying. Criticizing something that he was saying, as opposed to just what you just said, which is saying something bad about a person.
Right. I mean, there's a difference. My wife and I love each other. I love her with all my heart. But we don't like each other some of the times, believe it or not. God, Cheryl, if you're listening, tune this out. Okay.
I'll get you the tape, Cheryl.
Okay. But in any rate, we're entitled to say things, but not in the spirit of, and politicians do this, it's unfortunate, quality of politicians. I cannot excuse either candidates, but what I can say is that slurs on one's sex, slurs on one's wife, slurs on women in general, to me, these are no excuse. There is no excuse for them. And, yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Why don't we take a break? You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON-FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Lauren Landis. Our guest is Rabbi Steve Fish of Congregation Beth El Banah. We are talking about, because the Jewish holidays are coming up, Jewish ethics and Election Day is coming up, how you should use your ethics. And just because the rabbi is saying these are the ethical values, take them and decide what your values are. There's right. No right and wrong with some of these things.
But I think that God personifies that our understanding of God is that God, very simply, is good. The ultimate expression of good is in God. So you have to decide that for yourself.
And we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
I'm Dallas City Councilman Adam Medrano, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON-FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here with Lauren Landis. Patty has the week off. She will be back next week. We're talking to Rabbi Steve Fish. We're talking about the Jewish holidays are coming up. The Jewish holidays are a time of reflection. And so we're talking about different values. And specifically, Steve is talking about his Baptist, the Jewish values.
My Baptist values. I was raised in Tyler. So actually, I knew a lot of Baptist values.
Actually, Steve Sprinkle was with us a few weeks ago, and he was talking to us about his values, which were very similar.
Very similar,
yeah. Of course.
Okay, so we're talking about a variety of different values. We've talked about things like business dealings, how you deal with people in business, and what is fair and what isn't and what's acceptable. Equality for all people, ethical speech. Tell us a little bit about humility.
Yeah. In Micah, the prophet says, what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. And there is an aspect of Judaism known as Musar. It means ethical teachings. Humility is definitely a value, a strong value in Judaism. If I'm secure within myself, I don't need others to tell me how great I am or how poor I am. I have that self-judgment, and I have that self-understanding.
You're
well, thank you, David. My wife thinks so, too. As does Lauren. And if
of
Patty
course.
Were here, she'd express that same opinion simply because I'm here and she's looking at me. But, Patty, when you hear the tape, you may call me or put a Facebook post up. Anyway, humility is definitely a Jewish value. It doesn't mean that we should be humble to the point of self-deprecation, but at the same time, arrogance and self-aggrandizement is definitely not a Jewish value. And I think it's pretty clear that one candidate's pretty much in love with his own press releases and with what people think of him. Boy, I just said him.
Yeah, Gary, not Gary Johnson. Oh, phone. Everybody turn your phones off before the show starts. Are there some other values like humility that are good, that need to be balanced, that you need to be on one side or the other of them?
Yeah. I think the scientific reality is today that we know global warming is a reality. We know the effect that it is having on the polar ice caps. We know the effect that it is having on our environment, the craziness of what the weather we're seeing. And although scientists may argue over it, the consensus is that global warming is a real difficulty for our planet and for the people living on it. Judaism says that this planet and all of it is given to us as a gift. And we as human beings are accountable for doing everything we can to take care of the planet. And we are required to not waste. We're required to reduce pollution. And no matter what the state of the economy, it doesn't matter. There is one candidate, I know, who supports the aspect of ecology and environmental ethics more than the other candidate.
Well, and basically there's been one party that's been trying to denigrate all scientific proof.
Right.
When Eddie Bernice Johnson was here, we said to her, she's on the Science and Technology Committee, and has been. She's the ranking Democrat, I think, right now on that committee. And Louis Gohmert is on that committee, too. He doesn't believe in science. I said to her, how do you go to work every day with somebody? It used to be that they would debate, well, we want more money for NASA. No, we need more money for something else. And now it's, does science exist or not?
Right.
Correct. And in fact, there was one candidate recently for the State Board of Education who is very much a religious fundamentalist. And she stated that man, because of the Bible and the years, lived alongside the dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
She was running for the State Board of Education.
Mm-hmm.
And these beliefs, yes, I accept the Bible. I accept the Bible for its moral teachings. I accept the Bible for its exemplars of aspects of it. But I'm not, first of all, if you've noticed, it's very rare that I have mentioned biblical verses in here. Biblical verses can be interpreted and twisted.
I have one that I want to ask you about.
Okay, go ahead.
In Jewish belief, when something is mentioned in the Torah, which is the first five books of the Bible, when something's mentioned in the Torah once, it's there and you deal with it, right? If something's mentioned twice, three times, four times, that makes it more important, right?
Correct to an extent, David.
Okay.
As an example, the book of Leviticus has all kind of laws about sacrifices. Obviously, since the temple does not exist anymore, it doesn't make 15 mentions of the bullock more important. In fact, it was really funny. Years ago, in another congregation in another city, I had a high school class that came in, and they said, "Rabbi, where do you do the sacrifices?" And because that was their understanding of what Judaism was.
Where do you do them?
Where? In the basement. Anyway, that was in Corpus Christi. We didn't have basements, obviously. But yes and no. But when moral principles are mentioned over and over and over again, and they're carried on in the Christian tradition than the Muslim tradition, I think they're pretty important.
Okay, so this one is mentioned 36 times. I got that from another rabbi who's on this station. But the line that's mentioned in one form or another over and over is, take care of the widow, the orphan, and the stranger.
Absolutely. And that goes back to all, not only are all people equal, but the marginalized and those who have the most difficulty. Last week you had people from Educare on. I'm on their board. I'm very strong in believing that people who are marginalized and who have more difficulty, the widow, the stranger, the orphan, we are responsible for taking care of them.
Okay, so the widow and the orphan, that would be a mandate for some form of welfare, food stamps, some form of it for those who need, right?
Right.
Some basic health care for everyone.
And that's what those things would be.
That's easy.
Okay, so that's mandated in the Bible. What does it mean, the stranger?
The stranger means, in my interpretation, the biblical verse that most clearly states it is at the Passover Seder, when you were asking me about the Passover meal. Treat the stranger kindly, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Hope I didn't throw those VU meters there, but probably throwing them all over when
emphasized.
No, okay. You got electronics to compensate for that now. But because we were strangers, and because at one time or another, every people lived in a land in which they are different, the first stage of discrimination is branding or looking at someone and saying they are the other. Now, I recognize that people are different, but once you say they are other, and that you brand them, not brand them, but state in your mind that they are that. And then it's very easy to go from the other to those who are less than.
Right.
And that's a basis of prejudice, bigotry, and all that.
It's easier to go from other to foreign to, if not alien.
Right, exactly.
And you start treating them like that.
Right. For example, the phrase, use illegal aliens, not illegal immigrants.
Right.
But aliens, I mean, my gosh, I've seen the movie Alien. They don't look like that.
I agree.
Okay? Of course not.
They look human to me.
They are very human. And all of us are human.
Right.
So, again, some of the statements that we've heard recently would be completely antithetical to biblical teaching.
Absolutely.
Is there any way to interpret what that means to exclude people, to not treat people equally?
Yeah, of course. When you talk against people, when you say, I'm not going to let these people in, when you say, these people are rapists, the stereotyping of people because of their religion, because of their ethnic origin, and also the fact that one candidate has repeatedly refused to repute Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan. Only when pushed did he say it. At first he said, I don't even know who the guy is.
Right, mm-hmm. Which was a lie.
Which was and then he said, and then the person questioned him, he said, well, what about the Ku Klux Klan? Do you know what that is? And he skirted across that one. Finally, I think after 5 or 10 or 12 times, finally said, I don't know the guy, but I guess I'm against him. Mm-hmm. If that's not an equivocal statement of approval, I don't know what is.
Mm-hmm. And I would say so many people are identifying with that because they themselves don't know who David Duke is. They don't know much about the Klan because it's not in the news much anymore.
Thank God.
And it's not taught in schools anymore.
Right, but...
I think a lot of them do know.
Okay.
I think a lot of them do know who they are.
But at the same time, I think that history texts, even in Texas, talk about Hitler and talk about the dangers of a dictatorship and talk about the dangers of a person who really branded others.
And I'm not excusing it. I'm not excusing it at all. But what I'm saying is a lot of people, it's just not important to them. They don't live their lives that way, although some of these people, I'm sure, do live their lives that way. But I guess what I'm saying is...
Ignorance is no excuse, David.
No, but especially for the person running for president to not know, does that disqualify you in one way?
I think there are so many ways in which one person running for president has disqualified himself. And then for him to say and try to turn that argument around and take petty and very small issues that have been decided hundreds of times before.
Okay, we had another example of something similar this week. Gary Johnson is running for president on the Libertarian ticket. He didn't, when he was asked about Aleppo, he didn't know about it. What was your thought about that?
At first, I thought he was joking.
Okay.
I thought he was like, is he serious?
Yeah. Anybody who doesn't keep up with current events.
Right.
I mean, you don't even have to read the newspaper every day.
Just listen to it.
Just listen to it. Or look at a picture of a kid who's taken out of there that is going to probably win the Pulitzer Prize for photography this year. And I'm getting chills just thinking about that photo.
I know exactly what photo you're talking about.
He's disqualified himself. Now, let me say something else. Some people have told me that they might vote for one of those parties because they are closer to representing them, the Libertarian Party and the
Green Party.
There are some great ideals in those. Because of the electoral system in the United States, because of the Electoral College, I'm going to be very critical of you people who are supporting those parties. I'm not going to endorse or not endorse anybody. But I can say that because of the Electoral College system, you are throwing your vote away. I urge you to vote, but I also urge you, because of the electrical college, it's become electrical, so to some extent.
Okay, I want to say on Gary Johnson another minute. What did you think of his explanation the next day? He came out with a statement. Did you hear what it was?
Yeah, something like...
I didn't hear that. I goofed.
Basically, what it was, he said he...
Blanked out.
He just blanked on it. Of course, he knew what it was, and when he heard the name Aleppo, had it been Aleppo, Syria, had it been anything else, of course he would have known. And just Aleppo, just out of the blue, when we weren't discussing Syria, just...
Yeah, he blanked and he said, of course he knew. Well, let me give you one of the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not lie. So it was, to my mind, a blatant lie. And it took him a day to correct it. Now, in the same token of lying, I was appalled by lies that were told by one candidate and were not refuted by the person, by Matt Lauer, who was interviewing.
Oh, yeah.
He got very poor. I was also extremely upset with the Associated Press, who is deemed to be one of the most reliable news organizations in the country, when they were discussing the Clinton Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
They distorted statistics to to go against Hillary Clinton. I'm not saying I'm for Hillary Clinton or against her, but when the press does not do its duty of reporting things equally, and I know that there is no actual truth because it's interpretation. We're human beings, but when there is such blatant disregard of facts.
Okay, so one candidate is saying that he will go after the press and sue the press.
Yeah.
In other words, do what they've done in a place like Russia, where they have a free press now, too, since the fall of communism, but you better not say certain things.
Well, what I think is interesting about that statement is that this certain person's actually benefited heavily from the press.
Oh, of course. Okay, but what is the value there on a free press?
The value of a free press and the value of free speech is that I can go out on the street. I can't endorse a candidate today. And I can't endorse
a candidate. And that's just simply a KNON policy. We
just
simply don't do it.
And it is for Beth also, because it's a federal policy regarding status.
Yeah.
But let me go back to what I want to, and then we're close to the end.
Yeah, we have like 2 minutes.
Okay, but what I want to say is a saying that has been heard by so many people, and that was not of a Jew, but by a Lutheran minister in Nazi Germany. And the value of a free press certainly relates to this. Martin Niemöller said, "First, they came for the socialist, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionist, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I was not a Jew, so I didn't speak out. And then they came for me, and there was no one left."
That's a good place to end, but we have another minute.
That's okay. I can go.
So,
the free press.
One thing that I like to say about the free press is my profession as a journalist is the only profession that is covered and protected by the U.S. Constitution.
Absolutely.
But the reason for it,
ethically is that we have seen when a free press is not allowed, that the strong, it's simply a case of bedlam, and the strongest person is going to survive. Mm-hmm. And the strongest, the person who can be the meanest and who can gather the most military forces is the one who's going to prevail. When there's a free press, that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rabbi Fish, thank you for being
here. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And as you can see, I have no opinions whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Come back and don't share those again.
Thank you, LaRon. Thank you, LaRon.
And thank you for being here. Next week, we're doing poetry. We're talking about Allen Ginsberg, Gertrude Stein. We have two poets who are going to be with us. They're putting on a performance, and it's a Pride performance during this Pride Month here in Dallas. And I'm talking around what it is because we're still working out exactly what our show is going to be next week, but it'll be a lot of fun. It'll be a lot different than our usual shows. For all of us here at Lambda Weekly, have a good week. We will see you next week.